And now a fond farewell to Downton Abbey. After six seasons, the PBS series comes to an end this Sunday. I talked last year with the show's executive producer. Rebecca Eaton is also the executive producer of Masterpiece. That's the nation's longest-running weekly primetime drama series. And she told me Downton Abbey almost never happened. I was interested to read your in your memoir, you initially turned down Downton Abbey because it was too similar. You were doing a reboot of the very, very popular series Upstairs, Downstairs. So you turned Downton Abbey down. What?
I did. I did. Can you believe it?
I can't.
And I still have my job. And I'm talking to you on the phone. I did turn it down. I thought it looked very promising, very solid. Julian Fellowes, yeah. But we were doing the new Upstairs, Downstairs, which was, you know, kind of the same thing. It was two different communities, one upstairs, one downstairs. But the Downton Abbey one was in a country estate, and it was a slightly different time period. But it looked too close. So I did pass on it. Thank God it made the rounds of the American networks, and they all turned it down. And it came back to me. It boomeranged back to me, and I could redeem myself.
Well, what changed your mind?
Maggie Smith. I heard that Maggie Smith and Elizabeth McGovern had been cast. And I loved Elizabeth McGovern from, of course, Ordinary People years ago, the movie she did with Robert Redford, her first movie. And Maggie Smith. I've always adored Maggie Smith, and the fact that Maggie wanted to do it made me think, there's something here.
Let's take a listen because, you know, I watch Maggie Smith in Downton Abbey and I think, you know, it really is all about casting. So let's take a listen here.
I'm so looking forward to seeing your mother again. When I'm with her, I'm reminded of the virtues of the English.
But isn't she American?
Exactly.
She's just...
I know. God. And that's Julian Fellowes, the writer, creator, writer. He channels Maggie and then just hands her these solid gold lines and off she goes.
And yet this is a show, I mean, here in the United States, there's a lot of, because of the income inequality, there's a lot of anger against the 1%. And if there was ever a show, as you point out, that was about the 1%, it's Downton Abbey. So why do you think do we have such a fascination with the show?
It's quite a mystery. And if we knew for sure, we would duplicate it and do it again and have another hit show. So we're all just guessing. But, you know, I think there's always interest in aspirational television. You know, people who have a lifestyle beyond ours or whose lives seem to turn out better than ours. I mean, that's part of the entertainment of television. My own theory is that there is a quality of goodness to the way Julian creates characters. This is a community. We don't have many communities left that operate adequately in our lives. And here's a community of people, the fancy people upstairs, the working people downstairs, but they all need to work together to make the thing continue. And of course it's fiction. Of course, it's, you know, everything turns out better than probably in real life. But the quality, the good-hearted quality to it, of working towards one end. Everybody's looking out for themselves, but they also are kind of thinking about the others in the house. I think it's hugely appealing to people. And then you populate it with gorgeous actors and beautiful frocks. And in that house, Highclere Castle, which plays the part of Downton Abbey, then you're on to something.
I was interested to read that when you first took the job, you didn't understand the appeal of mysteries.
No, my mother was a huge mystery reader. And from as far as I could tell, she would waste entire afternoons reading these silly books, which were just, okay, somebody's killed and they're a bunch of suspects and whodunit. And they were like puzzles to me. I love to read too, but I liked more complicated, deeper stories, not formulaic stories. So I never did understand the appeal of mysteries.
This is coming from the executive producer of the Poirot series and Prime Suspect.
I know. So, but I love television. mysteries. I love because they are not just about whodunit, but then you have these gorgeous sets. You know, the Poirot's the kind of the deco nature of it, or you know, Lewis set, and then the beautiful Thames Valley or Foyle. Then you get Michael Kitchen playing Christopher Foyle.
And Helen Mirren in Prime Suspect. I mean, again, casting.
Yes. Yes. So I love the television mysteries. I do love to watch them, and I think their mysteries translate really well into television, but just reading them, I'd rather read War and Peace, I guess.
It seems, you know, easy to now look at Sherlock and say, oh, yeah, that's going to be a big hit. But what attracted you about this series in the beginning?
Well, Stephen Moffat wrote it, and Stephen Moffat is the head writer on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And he has a huge imagination and skill. And so that was an appeal. Benedict Cumberbatch has been an actor and done lots of masterpiece productions over the years. And the pilot, within 5 minutes, I could tell this was going to be just such a romp because they were all having so much fun. Stephen Moffat's words, you know, given to Benedict Cumberbatch were priceless. And the chemistry between Benedict and Martin was so comfortable and witty and well-handled that you just you have that feeling, oh, this is going to be great. And you can just kind of settle back and be taken on the ride, which is the feeling you want your viewers to have. And if you have it within 5 or 10 minutes, you know, oh, no-brainer.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Rebecca Eaton. She's the Emmy Award-winning executive producer of PBS's Masterpiece. Her memoir is called Making Masterpiece, 25 Years Behind the Scenes at Masterpiece Theater and Mystery on PBS. I was surprised in this book at how forthcoming you are. And one of the moments that really surprised me was you disclose the details of a run-in that you had with contacts at Mobil Oil. Now, Mobil Oil was the sole sponsor of Masterpiece Theater at the time.
Uh-huh.
And this was about intrusive editorial influence. Uh-huh. Mobil asked that you be fired.
Uh-huh.
And you weren't.
And I wasn't.
So what happened?
I was made fairly miserable, but I wasn't fired. Yes, it was a very tricky time because Mobil had funded Masterpiece to the tune of $250 million over the years. And PBS and WGBH had always held the line. But they, you know, they would flex every now and then. And it was very hard work to resist the flexing. We always did. But I kind of lost it at one point and made, you know, what we would say would be a pretty fatal error and hung up on a representative of Mobil Oil in one particular conversation. That's not a good thing to do.
Yeah, that's why you said you had to work on your people skills, I guess.
Yes, in terms of job security. But it was tough, but I'm still here. Mobil eventually withdrew their funding, not because of me. They were bought by Exxon, and Exxon decided they didn't want to pursue it. So life went on. It was just very rough and very scary for a time, but I'm still here.
In the book, there's also a number of things that you mentioned that you turned down. And let me give you...
This is turning into an extremely painful interview, Celeste.
I'm so sorry, Rebecca, but these were the things that, you know, it's the drama that catches...
I know, the drama.
The drama. And you should understand that better than anyone. So
Yes.
You turned down My Left Foot, starring Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yes.
You turned down the Pride and Prejudice series with Colin Firth.
It's kind of remarkable that I still have my job, don't you think?
No, because you've had so many incredible, I mean, obviously there's been so many unbelievable successes, but I'm just wondering which is the most painful looking back?
Well, you know, I actually wrote, people have mentioned, why did you write about this? Why did you tell the stories of how you, what's the matter with you? And I don't know exactly what's the matter with me, but I chose to because I do think this is supposed to be a memoir of Masterpiece, but also a personal memoir of a, you know, a woman in the last part of the 20th century, you know, becoming a television executive, trying to do a family and be a good person all at the same time. And I thought, you have to tell the whole story. You have to tell the mistakes and the recovery from the mistakes, the consequences. I mean, why else write it? You know, otherwise it's just silly. And I do look back on those because they mattered. Pride and Prejudice, if everybody thinks it was on Masterpiece,
they
by
do.
The way, it was on A&E, but we always get credit for it. The consequence of it is that it has made millions and millions of dollars for A&E rather than for PBS. So that's kind of a big mistake. But it happened, and I survived, and Masterpiece survived. So I think that was the purpose of kind of going into things is, you know, perhaps for younger women coming up, you do make mistakes. You make big mistakes. If I'd worked for NBC, CBS, I don't know, probably would have been fired. But I had a very supportive boss at WGBH at PBS, and I was carried through those mistakes, allowing me then to make some good decisions, which seemed to have worked out.
Let me just mention, for those who don't know, WGBH is the public radio and TV station in Boston. And so before we go, let me give you a chance to go entirely the other direction and tell me, you know, I mean, all of the different successes, some of them you weren't there for, but Upstairs, Downstairs, I, Claudius, Bleak House, The Jewel and the Crown, Jeeves and Wooster, mm-hmm. some incredible, incredible TV dramas and comedies on Masterpiece. Which are you most proud of? And by that, I mean, which did you kind of have to fight for and battle for and then end up just feeling like I was right?
What an interesting question. There is a moment. It was a long time ago in a show people might not remember. It was called A Very British Coup. And it starred a British actor, Irish actor named Ray McAnally. And it was a big risk because it was a contemporary conspiracy thriller. This was shortly after Jewel and the Crown, shortly after I had taken the job. I was new to the game. It would have been a real departure. It was a real departure. And nobody really supported me in saying we should take this. Actually, I should correct that and say Henry Becton, who was the president of WGBH, did support me in it. Anyway, a lot of doubt, a lot of resistance, and I just thought this is a great story. It's edge of the seat. It's really good. It will take us into a whole new territory of contemporary fiction, which is where Masterpiece should go, in part, not abandoning its roots, but we should move into that space, as we say now. So we did it and won an international Emmy, got great reviews, got great ratings. It worked. So I think that's the point where I felt that I really had my feet on the ground and I could begin to make my own decisions and take some risks.
That was Rebecca Eaton. She's the executive producer of the PBS Masterpiece series, Downton Abbey. The show's series finale airs Sunday night at 8 o'clock on GPB TV.